Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Hidden Grotto Sachs. Ethan, we've got some hidden grottos to explore here in the format of Bloomburrow today.
We haven't done an episode like this in a while. I feel like, you know, the formats are coming fast and loose a little bit, and so we really just have like a let's scramble to get people the good information, and then oops, it's 50 takes. But we have some bad information to give people.
We have the how to lose in style episode. How to 2-1 in style, excuse me.
I felt a return to my roots in diving into this. Like, you know, like I feel like original Ixalan, I was like, you know, you draft these like soup deck, Sailor of Means stuff, the 2-1s that feel like 3-0s. And that's the kind of decks we're going to be talking about today. Because I do think, like, you know, the surface level stuff of the format is very clear, and it's clear what is good and what you should be doing in the format at this point. And I do think there is some cooking to be done. Whether or not that is competitive remains to be seen. We'll chat about that a little later. But I do think there's some like really sweet stuff to do in the format. And like 1 out of 10 drafts, you're going to be happy that you've done it. So for our listeners who are drafting that much, we've got the goods for you. For our listeners who aren't drafting that much, just observe the train wrecks that we'll be describing to you. It's going to be a good time.
Well, I think 1 in 10 drafts is correct. Maybe 1 in 20 drafts, whatever. But if you are bored and you want to go after it, you can do it like 6 out of 10 drafts and just 2-1 and 3-3 or 4-3 your way to lots of fun and not too many lost gems.
Exactly. Yeah, like we're not going to be talking about decks or strategies that are like bad. Like they're just not, there are things that the problem for me, if our listeners are like me, where, and I messaged you about this, that I was like, the problem is that you shouldn't be trying to do this. Like it's a real off ramp, like sometimes, like be aware, have it in your back pocket type thing.
I mean, like sometimes it is right though. Like exactly. I did red black spells and it was right for my draft. I think we'll take a look at that draft a little bit later.
I drafted a deck that I sent you. I was like, I should have just been blue green frogs in the seat, but I drafted a blue green loops deck splashing builder's talent that like there's no reason I should have done that, but I'm just like, I had a taste. I'm chasing the dragon at this point.
if you want to feel something, Bloomberg is not great for feeling things other than pain if you're playing competitively.
That's fair. And we are here on the Sunday night of the Arena Open weekend, so perhaps that pain is a little fresh for one of our co-hosts here. So we have some Arena Open draft stuff to chat about. We're going to talk about some format updates. We're going to talk about some build around stuff to be doing in the format. All that good stuff is coming up in just a bit. First things first, let's chat about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon page. And we've got some exciting stuff brewing via the Patreon in the coming months. I'm going to be drafting up an email to our patrons about some changes coming this week. So that's exciting. And then we'll be teasing that to our general population in the coming months as well. But the Patreon is great. It's great for us because it lets us do this show. The show is listener supported in that way. And also the Discord, which is what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to, I think is really one of the best communities for Limited, full stop, on the internet. And Arena Open weekends are a great time for that. People, you know, chucking around their sealed pools, people giving each other pep talks, getting to cheer people on. Got to see some great drafts that folks did on day two. And cheer them on to get to draft two. All that stuff is really awesome. And then, you know, as new set season is always upon us, that's also a great time to get in on the Discord to be able to, you know, to sort of mull over the spoilers and previews and do tier lists and practice drafts and all that stuff. And some great stuff as you move up the reward tier rankings. But I won't even chat about those because they're going to be switching up in a little bit here. But we also want to make sure that we shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we are welcoming Robert, Ian, and Pierre. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Also should shout out to our patrons. The Lords of Limited community is strong. Both of my opponents in the Arena Open creamed me. I had a quick O2 drop from the Arena Open. So shout out to Tankara from the Lords of Limited Discord, who added me with a sorry for ousting you with some black mythics in the Lords of Limited Discord. Then I played against Farwin, who is a frequent of my stream. I don't know if Farwin's in the Discord or not, but knew both of my opponents in the arena day one, and they both got the best of me. So good games.
I hope they went on to get some money as well, because they had some banger looking decks from your side of the battlefield. Well, should we get into it? Should we talk about the Arena Open weekend for you? I know I said I wasn't going to do anything, but I had like a free couple hours yesterday morning on Saturday, and I was like, well, let's see what I can do on my phone. I fired three bullets. I did not get there in any of them. I was really close, actually, I was 5-1. I was doing best of one because I was on my phone. I was like, I'm not doing any deck swapping here. I was 5-1 with a good looking red white aggro deck. And I was like, oh, I can't wait. I've got the tweet all crafted in my head. Like, look, I told everybody I would do best of three and I would play green and deck swap. And here I am with my red white aggro deck. But 5-1 turned into 5-3. And that was it for me. What was your day one like?
My day one was long. I just want the option to buy into day two for like $150 or like $125 or $100, like whatever the amount is, somewhere in there seems reasonable. Like, would you just take that, like, to buy into day two for $100?
I guess, but then it's not, I don't know, just a different tournament, right? Maybe, but not.
Not really. Like, it's just minus 8 hours of your Saturday that you buy back. Like,
that's fair. Yeah, it made me feel better. I don't know if you saw, like, Simon Nielsen had a great sealed weekend last week. He won the MTGO Creator 5K. I know he day two'd. I don't know what his result was on day two of the Arena Championship qualifier. And then he was like, yeah, I had a banger sealed weekend last weekend. And then all of his runs for day one this weekend were just garbage. So, you know, it is a bit of a crapshoot there.
I didn't actually do that many runs. I did 5 runs this time, but I had my very first pool was awesome. It was a Grixis spells deck. I had Festival of Embers and only like 5 creatures. It was a very cool Grixis control deck, like quick 5-0 into 5-3 because I started playing against green decks that could blow up my Festival of Embers. So I kept setting up Festival of Embers and then it would get blown up and then I no longer had sick amounts of card advantage. So I thought I was going to be getting there easily on the first bullet and then did not. And then I accidentally joined traditional and went all the way to the fourth round of traditional and lost in game 3 with like a solid black green deck, nothing special. So pain there, and then went 6-3 and then 5-3 and then finally got there at 5 a.m. with like a 7-1 run with not that spectacular of a deck.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, you didn't fire any bullets because all of your bullets almost got there.
Yeah, but I played a lot of Magic.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of Saturday. And I love playing Magic, but I this is the time of year where I start feeling the time constraint heavily.
The pinch is there come mid-August for you and the school year starting. Well, so let's see how the draft went for you. Why don't I take you through the picks here and you can tell us your thought process. Does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is day two, draft one.
Day two, draft one. You're operating on, what, 2 hours of sleep here?
Something like that, yeah.
You got a pretty good pack. Some notable commons. There's a Baker's Bane duo. One and a green, 2/2 ETBs makes a food. Whenever you expend four, it gets plus and plus one until end of turn. Is this still your choice for best common in the set? Or second behind Carrot Cake?
I'm kind of in on the Ethan commons don't matter plan. Like, I think I'm a full convert for play boosters. But yes, but green's kind of overdrafted right now, so I'm a little less thrilled about starting with it than I would have been 2 weeks ago or whatever, you know?
I guess that's a good question. So going into this draft, did you have any slight biases that were you looking for an excuse to not be green?
Yeah, I think so. If I had my druthers, I played a lot of Magic this week for me. I had more time and did a lot more drafting and was really trying to prep seriously for the Open. Played best of three and did all that jazz. And I think if I had my druthers, my start would have been to get deep into black. And then I felt most comfortable pairing black with blue, actually, in best of three. I think blue gets quite a bit better in best of three, especially if you're pairing it with black and you start out black and have good black cards. Blue just plays a super well support role to black.
Yeah, I co-sign that for sure. So there's a Baker's Bane duo and a Take Out the Trash. One on a red, deal three. To a creature, planeswalker, and if you control a raccoon, you may discard a card if you do draw a card. Then moving on to the uncommons, there's a Bark Knuckle Boxer, one and a green, 3/2. Whenever you expend four, it gains indestructible until end of turn. But this is just worse than Baker's Bane duo, right?
Just worse than Baker's Bane duo, in my opinion, yeah.
Okay. There's a Fireglass Mentor, the black-red 2/1. At the beginning of your second main phase, if an opponent lost life this turn, exile the top two cards of your library. Choose one of them until end of turn. You may play that card. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen this cast second main phase this week after my opponent has, like, had good attacks.
Oh,
like,
no.
Come on, people. Let's get it together. It's like week three. There is a Bandit's Talent. That's the black discard enchantment class that I still haven't. We'll talk about that a little bit later because I talked about not loving that in Sealed last week and definitely had some people at me with some decks and kind of a believer. I still haven't gotten to cook with this just yet. And like, but there's a lot of discard pieces out there that I think you could in our sort of niche build around life. And then your rare here is Essence Channeler. One and a white, 2/1 bat cleric. As long as you've lost life this turn, it has flying and vigilance. Whenever you gain life, put a ++1 counter on it. And when it dies, you put its counters on target creature you control.
Yeah, so I think for me, this pretty quickly narrows down to, I think, Essence Channeler versus Baker's Bane duo. Like, Take Out the Trash is fine. Fireglass Mentor's fine. But you don't really want to start red. So this is, do you want to try to plant your flag in green with Baker's Bane duo? Or do you want to maybe not have a reason to not draft green and maybe go into potentially one of the better decks in the format in black white, one of the best probably non-green decks.
Well, and the thing about Essence Channeler, as I'm unpacking this draft a little bit in my head, I looked at this earlier in the day, and I'll be honest, I think I would have selected Baker's Bane duo here, but the more I thought about Essence Channeler, the more I was like, well, it's not like, obviously it's at its best in black white. Right, that's where its ceiling is going to be achieved. But white is going to offer you, and especially if you pair it with green as well, like green is going to offer you some life gain with food. And white has a lot of inherent life gain synergies, depending on what cards you draft. So sure, you'll be skewing white-black when you start with this, but you don't have to only play this in white-black.
Correct. But this is a little bit of the blue-red kind of thing where you're like, you got to do some work to like get your card to be good. Unless you do the work, this is below average as a card.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. Well, all I'm saying is that I think like it's when I initially saw this pack, I was like, whoa, I guess because I'll say Ben selected Essence Channeler. I was like, oh, Ben's trying to shoot the moon here, I guess. But the more I'm thinking about it, it's not quite as extreme as that.
Yeah, I don't think it's that extreme. And I also expected green to be overdrafted and I wanted a better card to get me into green than Baker's Bane duo. It's more that than anything else. Like Baker's Bane duo might be a slightly better card than Essence Channeler. And I probably think that, but this was more of a meta game call
I'm into
than
it.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think back on pick two immediately gives you a nice pat on the back for taking Essence Channeler. Not really any commons to talk about. We will talk about one of these a little later on. Sticky Tongue Sentinel, 2 and a green, 3-3 reach. When it ETBs, you return up to one other target permanent you control to its owner's hand. But we got to just jump right to the uncommons and the rares. There's a Thoughtstalker Warlock here, 2 and a black, 2-2 menace. When it ETBs, you choose an opponent. If they lost life this turn, they reveal their hand. You choose an on-land card from it. They discard a card. Otherwise, they discard a card just in general. There's a hop to it, 2 and a white. Sorcery, create 3/1/1 white rabbit creature tokens, and your rare is Zoraline Cosmos Caller, 1WB 3/3 flying vigilance. Whenever a bat you control attacks, you gain 1 life. Whenever Zoraline enters or attacks, you can pay 2 life, and when you do, you return target non-land permanent card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield with a finality counter on it.
Yeah, this is weirdly kind of a hard pick, I think, for me, because I wasn't in love with the idea of, like, locking myself into black white 2 picks in, which is basically what you're doing if you take Zoraline here. I mean, like, you can pivot off it, but you're paying a huge cost. Like, you're giving away your first 2 picks. Mm-hmm. But if Zoraline works out, like, you're also doing amazingly well, right? Like, that's the right goal in the format, is to get into a 2-color streamlined deck. So, but with that thought in my head, I thought the deck that I was most suited to draft better than other people maybe was heavy blue control. Yeah. And Thoughtstalker Warlock, still fine if you end up in white black. Like, do you really need Zoraline in white black? It's much better than Thoughtstalker Warlock in white black. Like, the curve of Essence Channel into Zoraline is disgusting. Did that ever happen to me? Of course not. But
pull one out. Yeah.
Yeah. Pour one out. I did end up with 2 Essence Channelers. So could have had enough. Didn't come together though. So it was actually tough for me here. And I think this goes to show that you do have, like, you end up on rails pretty quickly in Bloomborough. But at the start of drafts, I do think in a lot of packs, you do have some agency about which railroad track you want to go down.
And if you want to, I mean, like, my start, I think, truly would have been Baker's Bane Duo into Thoughtstalker Warlock.
And I think you feel more flexible, certainly, than Essence Channel or Zoraline.
Yes, you feel more flexible, but the potential ceiling of your deck is lower at the moment.
Sure. Yes. And so it was really close for me between Zoraline and Thoughtstalker Warlock, mostly because I really wanted to try to draft blue-black, because stuff like, there's a Light Shell duo in this pack also, the 3 and a blue 3/4 otter with prowess, and when ETBs, surveil too. And if you're not on Light Shell duo, that card is incredible. It just keeps going up and up and up for me the more I play with it and the more I play against it.
Well, and it's a great example. We'll talk about this a little later in the episode. I think, like, one of the things I've really enjoyed about trying to cook in the format this week is unlocking the wheel and, like, figuring out, oh, this, I can get this card late and it's going to be really good in my deck. And Light Shell Duo just goes late.
It does, but it's quite strong. So I did take Zoraline here, pack 1, pick 2 over the Thoughtstalker Warlock. With the thought of, you know, if I'm gonna first pick Essence Channeler, I might as well try to be bats and do the thing.
And then I think things kind of congeal in terms of the two paths that I see in the draft. One being what you've done with Essence Channeler into Zoraline, and the other being what I think I would have done, which is Baker's Bane Duo into Thoughtstalker Warlock. I think pick 3 and 4, you're taking the same card no matter what. So we can dive into what those picks are. Pack 1, pick 3, there's an Uncharted Haven, the land that enters tapped, and you choose a color and it taps for a mana of the chosen color. There's a Nocturnal Hunger, 2 and a black, instant, gift of food, destroy target creature. If the gift wasn't promised, you lose 2 life. There's a Clifftop Lookout, 2 and a green, 1/2 reach. When it enters, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. You put that onto the battlefield tapped, the rest on the bottom in random order. And a Strike Force, 2 and a white, 1/3, flying, double strike, vigilance.
Yeah, this is close, I think, between Nocturnal Hunger and Strike Force, but ultimately I wanted to make sure I had my first removal spell locked up, so I took a Nocturnal Hunger here.
Yeah, and that's what I would have selected as well. And you get a second Nocturnal Hunger, pack 1, pick 4, and I don't think there's really anything to consider here. I mean, there's a Sonar Strike, the 1 and a white, deal 4 to it, an attacking, blocking, or tapped creature, and you gain 3 life if you control a bat. But even, I think, in black-white bats, you would rather have the second hunger than the first strike.
Well, and some of the black-white cards care about you losing life, and Nocturnal Hunger is a way to lose life, which is maybe a little bit harder to come by in black-white than gaining life on command. So
yeah,
it was close. I thought maybe there was a chance Sonar Strike Wheels. I doubt it this deep into the pack as it being the only white card left, but I took the second Nocturnal Hunger.
And then pack one, pick five is a bit of a decision point. I don't know. I do feel like you're kind of locked a little bit. Is that how you felt at this point, four picks in? Were you like, whatever, 90% to be black white at this point?
Not here. I thought there was another decision here, and this is where you really feel taking Zoraline over Thoughtstalker Warlock.
Yeah. So let's chat about it, because the only black card in the pack to go with the two black cards you've taken in the last two picks is Scales of Shale, two in a black instant, one less to cast for each lizard you control, and target creature gets +2/+0 and gains lifelink and indestructible until end of turn. Tons of blue cards in the pack. The best one being, I think, or the card with the highest ceiling being Eddie Merck Crab, 5 blue, 5/5 flash, one less to cast for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. It enters tapped if it's not your turn, and when it enters, tap up to two target creatures. And there's a rare in the pack, Alania, Divergent Storm, 3 blue, red, 3/5, whenever you cast a spell, if it's the first instant spell, the first sorcery spell, or the first otter spell other than Alania you've cast this turn, you can gift your opponent a card. And if you do, you copy that spell and you can choose new targets for the copy.
So this is close for me here between Scales of Shale and Eddie Merck Crab. I think even with where I'm at, because this is a strong signal at this point. I mean, we're pack one, pick five. There's still Alania. There's still Eddie Merck Crab. Like, clearly this is saying nobody to my right
wants to
be
blue,
or at least the four people to my right don't really want to be blue. And I think if I had Thoughtstalker Warlock instead of Zoraline, I would take Eddie Merck Crab pretty happily here. Once I took Zoraline and I got to this spot, I just know myself. And I think if I take Eddie Merck Crab, like, I'm in danger of like waffling, doing weird things, and like trying to split the difference between two decks that are very disparate decks. So I ultimately settled on Scales of Shale just to keep myself in the black-white lane come what may. But I think this pick is interesting and close. I think if you have the Thoughtstalker Warlock instead of Zoraline, you're supposed to take Eddie Merck Crab, because then you can still kind of split the difference for black-white and blue-black. Like, if the next pack there's no blue and there is whatever black or white cards, sure, you ship the Eddie Merck Crab. But this is the kind of thing that getting deep into black lets you do with blue, is you can reap the benefits of, you can cherry pick the best blue cards to go along with the black cards. And the good blue cards are good. It just gives you next to nothing at common, but there are a lot of good blue rares and blue uncommons.
Right. And so in the instance that you found yourself in at this table where it seemed like people were not interested in blue, you get to reap those benefits, even having the three good black cards in Warlock and Double Hunger. Yeah, really, really interesting here. I mean, you're thrilled, I think, once you stick to your guns there a little bit and take the Scales of Shale, because pack one, pick six, you get a carrot cake, the one in a white food enters, or when it's sacrificed, you get a 1/1 white rabbit and you scry one, because like that's just bread and butter for the black white life gain deck.
Yeah, I was thrilled to pick up carrot cake here. I think if you take the Eddie Merck Crab, you take an Into the Flood Maw, which is the other card.
Is that card good?
It's good. Yeah, because because then you can cast Mind Spirals. It just gives you interaction on the cheap. Yes, I think you're happy playing the first copy, maybe two in blue black decks.
Wow. So you think because you can just reap the, it's so cheap, and so you'll recoup the card at disadvantage later on.
Yeah, blue black is good at recouping the card disadvantage. Plus, think about green. Like, every one of its removal spells is a fight, and like your opponent can never fight when you have up single blue once they've seen this. It's powerful.
Okay. Yeah.
It metagames really well against the green decks. That's what I think blue black is set up to do I think it plays defense and wins the long game against the green decks that don't have card advantage engines.
Yeah, it rocks their scissors in a way. Like, yeah, it just sort of can go bigger and longer later. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you sent me your deck. You were sort of still tweaking the last few picks or whatever, but it looked really good to me. I mean, we know your removal suite is good, right? Double Nocturnal Hunger, double Savor you get, triple Carrot Cake. You said you got a second Essence Channeler. Like, the deck looks really strong.
The deck's good. I said it earlier, ran against two very strong competitors with some mythics. I, you know, so match one, I lost to the snake, the mythic snake, and Maha, and the auger, the Darksteel auger. My opponent just had black rares out the business. Their deck was excellent. And I also mulled to five in game two. So it wasn't much of a match there, my first match. And then against Farwin, I mulled to five game one and lost, and then mulled to six, won a super tight game on a mulled to six game two. And then game three was a scrappy battle. And then eventually they played the green season and just crushed me with that. So, oof. I mean, lost some rares, some interesting games against Farwin, some less interesting games against my first opponent with the mythic rare dot deck.
Yeah. Oof, that's brutal.
But I think the most interesting thing about my open draft is it looks like it's on rails, but I think there's actually decision points. And I think even taking Zoraline, if I had taken Eddymerc Crab, that's where, like, taking Eddymerc Crab is tough with the Zoraline, because then you have to decide, do you want Into the Flood more or do you want Carrot Cake? But pick two, if you take Thoughtstalker Warlock, I think you pretty easily get into blue-black, and I think it probably ends up better than my black-white deck. Pack three, there's like a Mockingbird. Pack three, pick five, I think, which is ridiculously late for that card.
You open a second Eddymerc Crab, pack two, pick one as well.
Yeah, so I think the blue-black deck could have been better had I had the discipline to take Thoughtstalker Warlock instead of Zoraline to go with the Essence Channeler, but that pick is so hard to make in the moment because it's so tempting to have Essence Channeler or Zoraline curve outs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Pack two, pick four, where you get the second Essence Channeler, there is a Starseer Mentor in the pack. That's the black-white signpost, 3/5 flying Vigi. And it doesn't wheel, which, you know, it's pretty late. Pack two, pick four for it to, you know, get all the way back around to you. But it can. Like, I've definitely seen signpost uncommons go that late. So it could be a signal that there's someone else in your business at the table as well.
I think it's possible there was another black-white drafter, because I never wheeled any of the Sonar Strikes either. But that's just a fine card in white decks, probably, in something that's as competitive as the Arena Open.
Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? Maybe you never skip leg day or therapy day.
When your schedule's packed with long days at the start of the school year, it's easy to let your priorities slip. Even when we know what makes us happy, it's hard to make time for it. But when you feel like you have no time for yourself, non-negotiables like therapy are more important than ever.
Adding therapy and exercise to my life this year has really helped me take the focus I had on trying to fix other people and put that on to myself.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Well, so you said you've had a chance to play a bit more, as evidenced by, you know, your weekend full of Magic. What are your updates on Bloomburrow? Where are you at?
I mean, I'm not loving it overall as a format. This is one of my least favorite formats the last 2 to 3 years, I think. Like, down in LCI territory for me. And I know Lost Caverns hit for a lot of people. It missed for me. And Bloomburrow, I think, largely has missed for me as well. But I did practice a bunch leading up to the Open as well. And the number one thing that I've seen is that you really only want premium cards in your deck. If you can afford it, like the draws when you draw your bottom third through fifth cards, like, it's just so punishing if you draw two of your four worst cards or three of your worst six cards or whatever in the format, unless your deck's all in on synergy and those few cards there fill out the synergy parts of your deck. But I just want cards that, the more I play the format, always do the thing that they do, and I can cast at any time and have them be good. Like, so, like, very basic board impacting plays, removal, that sort of stuff. Like, you can get yourself in trouble with too many combat tricks or too much card draw or too much fluff.
Are you out on synergy then, or lower on synergy than just like the raw card quality at this point?
I think I'm a little lower on synergy. I mean, the synergy stuff is very powerful, but I think it's harder to get it to come together to a certain extent. And I have been willing to splash a bit more, especially in the Sultai area. I think you can get rewarded for splashing. And as part of that, I think I've come up a bit on Fountainport Bell, certainly.
Yes.
I'm a believer. I think I just had some terrible experiences with that card early on and then hadn't played with it since. And I've played with it more, and I think I think it's good as a one of in decks, maybe even if you're not splashing, but you care about forge, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hidden Grotto.
And Threshold.
Yeah. That too.
Yeah.
Hidden Grotto is a one of. I've liked Uncharted Haven. Like all of those things to help you fix and splash a little bit have gone up for me.
Yeah, I definitely have found, and this is, you know, not related to my week of cooking in the format, but that splashing, I think, just has gone up. Maybe it was after playing a lot of Sealed and just feeling like I just want to play my best cards, that you don't get, like, it's not that you don't get punished, but I think, like, if you can't do streamlined synergy, you really want access to all the best cards you get to draft.
But it's not even just streamlined synergy. It's like streamlined synergy in 4 to 5 decks.
Correct.
The streamlined synergy in decks 6 through 10 just isn't good enough to compete with any of the streamlined synergy in decks 1 through 5.
Correct. Yeah.
Like it seems fun and powerful to do blue red spells or whatever, or I don't know, what's a better example? White blue birds. Like they just don't hang with
no,
and even an average black green.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think, speaking of black green, as green has been more drafted and more contested, I've liked black quite a bit. It's gone up for me, I think, the most this week as far as colors. And I already liked black, but I almost like starting black more than I like starting green at this point, because, and we mentioned this in the log, you can just reap, you can cherry pick the good blue cards. If black's open, you can cherry pick the best blue cards, and the best blue cards are still very good. You just need to not put the blue chaff in your deck.
Well, and all four of black's decks are good.
Black, white, black, red, black, blue, black, green. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all good decks. I agree. I co-sign the love for black here for sure.
And I think of those, and maybe this is a controversial take, I think blue, black is the second best one for me. I think black, green,
behind
number
black,
one.
Green. Yeah.
Black, blue, black, two, black, red, three. And I think black, white actually is the fourth of those. I think black, red's better than black, white.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't love black, red, as I've said before, but I think I kind of agree with that. Black white is so interesting because, again, in the rock, paper, scissors life of the format, it does just smash some decks in the format. Like some decks cannot beat the, like, whatever, the two, three cleric that attacks and gains life, like that into that triggering stuff. And you just can't contend with a curve out of 2, 3, 4, 5 flyers, but some decks really can. And so it's just matchup dependent there.
But I think black red as a deck is the deck that pops off the most with synergy. Like it gains the most from having like Gev, the rare wizard. Like the draws with Gev are just nigh unbeatable out of black red when that comes down on turn 2.
Yep.
And last thought here, just, I don't know if this is a point for the format. I do think the more I've thought about this, the more it has helped me a bit. But just the common ways that games play out from what I've seen this past week. And one of those is one of the two people curves out with synergy. And then like the other person has to be reacting to the first person's synergy curve out. And I think you really don't want to be that person, like if you can help it. So just knowing what type of deck you are and what type of synergies you have, how you can get that to happen as quickly as possible. Or if you don't have that, have great ways like Saver or, you know, the Raccoon Deal 3 to interact early and often. So that's one type of game. And the other, and it's weird to try to cover all these bases because they're on such different axes. I think that's what I've struggled with the most in the format is the sheer variety of opposite ends of the poles of the way that you can lose games. Because the next one is somebody just gets buried in card advantage, which is weird to say because the format does feel kind of like a curve out beat down synergy format. But there's also draws where, like, when both people go 2-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, kill your thing, like, and you start playing a game of Magic, it's very possible that there are a lot of ways to set up card advantage engines where you just have a personal Howling Mine every turn and are just burying the opponent over the course of turns, you know, 6 through 10 or whatever, and they have no chance no matter what you're doing because you're just drowning them in cards.
Yeah, my experience has been I obviously have experienced the curve out games, but grindy is my experience, not even just with the kinds of decks that we'll be talking about in just a second, but I have just found, you know, if you're playing black green versus black green, that is a grindy matchup. And because those matchups don't generally have a mind spiral, like a clear, like, here I'm ahead, I'm getting a 3-for-1. It's really just this little bit of value versus this little bit of value, et cetera.
Right. That's the third type, is the game stall out with resource trading. And the person that does have that little bit of card selection or card advantage, the person that sticks a dire sight or the person that has a scrying engine set up, wins those longer, grindier games. But then, like, it's tempting when you start to have games like that to put two dire sights in your deck. Uh-huh. And then once you put two dire sights in your deck, then you're in danger of just getting smashed by the curve out decks again when you draw your hand that has two dire sights and your first play isn't till turn four or whatever because you drew an awkward clunky hand. So just finding the balance of how to cover the bases of all those different ways the games go when the cards are so basic in for the most part has been a challenge for me. And I think just thinking about which one of those poles my deck leans toward the best and trying to lean into it while shoring up the weaknesses my deck has helped this week.
Yeah. To go back to your first point or first type of game you described about someone curves out with synergy and the other person has to react, I have felt that as the person having to react, because I don't think you probably don't feel it that much when you're like, my deck's doing the thing, I'm winning, it's great. But as the person reacting, it's so true. And the exact, because you say here in parentheses, don't want to be the one reacting. Like, I can think of moments this week where, like, you know, I do something on turn three, then my opponent plays Clement on their turn three, the one green blue 3/3 frog rare that you can pick up creatures of lesser mana value. It's like reverse birthing pod sort of when you cast creatures of higher mana value, and all your frogs tap for green or blue mana, but only for creatures or for creature spells. But so, like, then you're like, well, what I want to do is play my four drop, but I can't let this happen. So instead I'll play off curve and Nocturnal Hunger your Clement. But that feels bad too, because I'm like, I'm not being mana efficient. I'm not doing my thing, but they're doing their thing better than I'm doing my thing. And it does, you can feel like, oh, well, I had the removal spell for the Clement, but it's already sort of like done its job a little bit.
Right. It already picked up the pawn profit. You already got 2-for-1. You already had to play off curve. Like, it's tough. Reacting's tough in this format.
Yeah.
And there's a fourth type of game. This is not particularly actionable for the audience, but just like what you mentioned with Clement, bombs going unanswered. And not even that Clement's a bomb, but there are just cards that demand an answer, and if you don't happen to have the removal spell in your hand, you just lose the game.
Clement is one. I mean, Gev, you mentioned already the black red lizard rare. Like, Gev is one, Clement is one. The synergy rares in their respective decks, they're not bombs in the sense of whatever Maha or, you know, the mythics you faced in your run today, but they accrue value over turns, and it compounds over those turns, right?
So, like, a lot of those rares lead to you getting buried in card advantage, like, yes, or something as simple as the blue, like the Dower Port, whatever it's called, the 1/3 that can pay one of the blue to pick something up. If you don't have a removal spell for that, you just lose to it because you get buried in card advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it all makes all of your other removal, like, you're like, well, I have to answer that first, but I'd rather answer this other stuff, but I can't answer that other stuff when they have one and a blue up because they can just pick it up in response, like,
right,
really bad.
Yeah.
All right, can we cook?
We can cook. Let's do it.
Okay, so we got to talk about, and this is going to be a nice companion to, I think, what we're going to do next week, but I won't tease that just yet. But the my favorite card in the format, bar none, is Builder's Talent.
Whoa, we got him, folks!
I cannot get enough of this card. This is the one and a white class enchantment. Comes into play, and you get an 0/4. Level it up for a single white. And whenever a non-creature, non-land permanent enters the battlefield under your control, you put a +1/+1 counter on a creature, and you can pay 4 and a white to return a non-land, non-creature permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield. This card rules. This is just like, it's such a sweet card. And I really have gotten a chance to play with it a lot. And it is also, like, to my detriment. Like, I've started doing the thing where I'm like, building Builder's Talent decks. I'm like literally building it, hoping
you see Builder's Talent,
hoping the Builder's Talent comes around. And
it's
sometimes
like me in the Streets of New Capenna big score era. I just knew I was going to get past the big scores.
It's totally true. Yeah, but it doesn't quite work out when it's the uncommon. But I did. But sometimes when, like, they're opened and no one at the table wants them, you can't. Like, I got 4 of them in a deck earlier this week, and it's so sick. So here is what you want to do with Builder's Talent. The cool thing about the card is, and we'll talk about a lot of other like different things to do, but I think this is like the coolest or best way to cook in the format is with this card. It's best in a Bant shell, but every color adds something to the mix. So the best card, and I shouted this out in the draft, that has gone up for me is Sticky Tongue Sentinel. That's the 2 and a green 3/3 reach that picks something up when it, or you can't pick something up when it comes into play. This is just so cool. It's great with the talents, and the talents that will, as we'll talk about later, like they're almost all of them have moved up for me. Like they're all really sweet. Even though like I said, I haven't quite done Bandit's Talent yet. I am playing a deck with Gossip's Talent right now. I know some people have had success with that, even though I think it's a little clunky-ish. That's the one in a blue one that your creatures surveil when they come into play. And then you can make something power three or less unblockable. And then you can, the third level lets you, once a creature connects, you can blink it. But you can do it to any creature that connects. So if you connect with two or three, you can blink all of them, etc. Anyway, so Sticky Tongue Sentinel, it really does harken back for me with the class enchantments with picking up sagas in Neon Dynasty. It's like the exact same thing. And it's really powerful. Like getting to, especially if you're going really deep with Builder's Talent, like getting to cast Builder's Talent, level it up all the way to three, you've gotten something back. Then Sticky Tongue Sentinel is picking up Builder's Talent. You're replaying it, getting another 0/4, getting to rebuy the thing again from your graveyard, etc. It's really, really good. So that's, I think you at least want to be splashing it. The other reason that green adds so much with Sticky Tongue Sentinel specifically is the deck can gum up the ground easily. You can get overrun by flyers a lot. And the reach from Sticky Tongue Sentinel adds a lot of defense to the deck. And maybe you need a counter on it, right? But Builder's Talent is there to get it up to a 4/4 so you can, you know, block the glide dive duos, etc.
I think even outside of cooking with Builder's Talent, Sticky Tongue Sentinel is probably the green card that I've gained the most respect for over the last week and a half or so. Like, just the body is so solid. Also, if you're not cooking and you're just playing with good cards, like
you're playing Hunter's Talent,
when you pick up Hunter's Talent, like it's just stupid. I hate Hunter's Talent so much.
I do think it's a little too OP. I mean, I like the card because it's very powerful, but I think it's a little too egregious. Yeah, like the draft log, I think, was it last week that we went over? Where I could have picked a Sticky Tongue Sentinel second following up a Hunter's Talent, and I didn't. I was like, a little too early to take that card, I think. Now I do not think that. Now I'd just be like, nah, I'm good. I'll just lock up this synergy and this good reach blocker right now. So the next thing you want to really take advantage of Builder's Talent is the creatures that will wear the counters well. And so white has one major one in my mind is Shrike Force. That's the 2 and a white 1/3 flying double strike vigilance. Like
vigilance.
Well, I mean,
why does it need vigilance? That yeah. And the moose. Like, why? What are we doing here?
That gaining counters just is going to end the game in a hurry. And the other thing I realized this week is blue's unblockable creatures. That's why I like Bant for Builder's Talent. Blue's unblockable creatures wear the counters so well. So obviously, Shoreline Looter is a card we like a lot. The 1 and a blue. 1/1 can't be blocked. If you don't have Threshold, it's a looter when it connects. And if you do, it just draws a card when it connects. That's great. But then you get last pick Night Whirl Hermits, the 2 and a blue, 1/4, and which has vigilance, I believe. And when you have Threshold, it gets +1/+0 and unblockable. So you're playing the long game anyway. Your deck is already interested in a 3-mana 1/4 as a blocker. And then at a certain point, you're just like, oops. Here's a 5/8 vigilance unblockable ending the game in a hurry. So, and that goes back to my point about a lot of these, like a big factor for a lot of these decks or strategies is unlocking the wheel and making use of late pick cards. And when you get pick 12, 13, 14 Night Whirl Hermit, and then you're like, oh dang, this is actually going to be an ace for me at some point in the game. It's very powerful.
But this is also why, not to poo-poo here or bring down your vibe, but this is also why the deck is not tier one, because you're playing Night Whirl Hermits in a format with where green black is just insanely powerful, you know?
I agree. I mean, I do think like of the things we're gonna talk about today, I do think this is like I think this deck has real legs. Like, again, I don't know, like best version of this versus best version of the actual decks you're supposed to be drafting in the format. No, those probably went out. But this is like tier 1.5 in my mind, whereas I do think some other stuff we're going to talk about is like tier 2.
Sure.
Instant speed ways to make food is important because that turns, once you get Builder's Talent up to level 2, that turns these into combat tricks. So like,
yes, that's where it's scary playing against Builder's Talent.
So like Paw Patch Formation, the one in a green can blow up a flyer, an enchantment, or make a food draw card. Cash Grab, you want to make sure you have like some ways to some squirrels. We'll talk about the changelings as well, because sometimes you do get into some looping territories here, and you may want a 2-3 reach that can stack the bottom of your library. Saver is excellent here. That's the thing that black adds to the deck really well, is Saver as a cheap removal spell plus giving you that food at instant speed. The thing that Cash Grab does that's so great is that when you have multiple Builder's Talents, you bin a Builder's Talent, and then your Builder's Talent that you have in play can get it back, right? Because level 3 lets you get back a non-creature, non-land permanent, and then you're just cooking.
I will say of all those cards, Paw Patch Formation is just, I think, an include in most green decks in the format. Yes. It just is very good in blowing up the talents. Having a card that can blow up the talents while not costing you that
and
much.
Banishing and always, Light.
Right, and potentially being synergistic is strong. And then the other thing that's wild about Cash Grab, I don't know how I went this far in the format without realizing this, because I have played green a lot. I did not know Cash Grab had the text that if you didn't have a squirrel in play, if you pulled a squirrel out of your yard, you still get the food.
Yes.
I was playing Sealed yesterday and my opponent had no squirrel and made a food. And I was like, whoa, what happened here? And then I read Cash Grab more closely. I just always had nut squirrels decks, and I value Bone Cash Overseer really highly. So I've always Bone Cash Overseered Cash Grab.
Sure.
Or not realizing it, I have saved my Cash Grabs till post-squirrel.
Till you had a squirrel. Wow.
Yeah. So I was already super high on Cash Grab. I've just been playing it suboptimally.
If you end up pairing with red, which I think is the least likely, Blacksmith's Talent is a way to double trigger Builder's Talent. And again, like leveling up Blacksmith's Talent, like you could end up in a Jeskai life where Blacksmith's Talent pairs really nicely with the counters from Builder's Talent and your blue unblockable creatures as well, getting the double strike equip, etc. And then lastly, the colorless cards, Bumbleflower Share Pot is just paramount. Like you have to have one copy in these decks because it gives you a removal spell that you can buy back, and it double triggers Builder's Talent. And Fountainport Bell is great. You're going to want to be splashing in these decks, and this is just like a cantrip for you to get back. And it's going to, it's like basically a land, right, that triggers your Builder's Talents.
In classic Lords of Limited fashion, I was very high on this card in our set reviews. You were very low on it, and I have yet to play with Builder's Talent.
It's like, I mean, I've been playing a lot on my phone in this format, so it's not quite an accurate sample. But Builder's Talent is, I believe, in my top 10 drafted cards in the format. Like, I just don't pass it right now because it's all I want to be doing. So that's my outline for Builder's Talent specifically. And now I want to talk about the talents in general. Like, so there's some other cooking to be done. Like I said, I haven't quite done the Bandit's Talent discard deck, but I do think, there's something there even outside of the attrition war you were talking about in Sealed. I don't know quite what it is. I don't know quite how you just don't die to stuff on board when you're doing Bandit's Talent and Ruthless Negotiation and Psychic Whirls. But the fact that all of that exists, like, you really can grind people out with Bandit's Talent then accruing that card advantage for you.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am much more skeptical of Bandit's Talent in draft than I am in Sealed.
Yeah. I haven't quite gotten this, but Artist Talent Burn, I had this opportunity.
Are you listening to yourself right now?
What?
Artist Talent Burn in Bloomborough. Get out of here.
Well, so I could have had this, but someone, I don't know what, they rare drafted or whatever. I should have gotten this in a good, in a red, it was like basically mono red burn deck. And so this is the talent
wheel?
That, on the, I should have gotten it on the wheel. Like no one should
be
playing.
You got greedy?
No one should be playing that card. I should get it. But so that adds two, it's level three adds two damage to non-combat damage that you do. And there's a lot of, like, turning your Playful Shubs into deal three draw card, Blooming Blast dealing five when you gift the treasure, Kindle Spark Duo tapping to deal three.
And how exactly are you remotely responsibly getting into this deck?
Oh, that I don't know. Like, like the way I did, which was like getting into a red spells deck and then hope the artist talent getting open. This is, that's a bit of a meme. Scavenger's Talent, though. Have you played with this card? This is the black rare. Whenever something you control dies, you make a food, only triggers once a turn. Level two, whenever you sack a permanent, you mill two cards. Any target player mills two cards. And then level three says in your end step, you can sack three non-land permanents, and then you get to bring back something with a finality counter on it from your graveyard. Scavenger's Talent mill is real.
Yeah, Scavenger's Talent is sick. It unlocks a whole archetype. It's one of the few build arounds in the format, but again, like, it's not great.
Oh, I think it is. I think it is actually great. The problem with it is that it's best in the best deck. Like, it's just
sure.
Like, you're in a black green deck and you have it, you're just like playing it. And then, because the thing that happens with the card is you're doing some attrition-y stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I just mill you in two turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think black green does that really, really well. Let's talk about red black as a spells or control deck. I had an opportunity to play this as a control deck earlier this week and was really impressed.
Yeah, I also drafted one and am in the finals right now in a best of three traditional with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't played the last match yet.
Speaking of cards in classic Lords of Limited fashion that I believe I gave it an F and I actually kind of liked it in this deck, I played a Hoarder's Overflow
for the first time. Really?
Well, so the red-black decks, they need card advantage in some form. And you would like that to be, I think, Stargaze. But Stargaze can be a little dicey because unlike in black-green or black-white, where you're mitigating the life loss from Stargaze with your food or your life gain synergies in white, red black doesn't have that. And so that you can be in a spot where you're like, I'm stable. I want to pop off with my card advantage spell, but I don't really want to go to like four life or whatever. And Hoarder's Overflow, I found like pretty easily as it just drew me four cards in all the games I casted in this deck. So again, this is the one in a red enchantment. When it enters or when you expend four, you put a counter on it, and then you can pay one on a red to sack it, discard your hand, and draw cards equal to the counters on it. And I also found that Mind Drill Assailant as Wishcoin Crab Plus was really good for the deck, like just as roadblock, mana sink for card selection at some point, and then potential, like a 5-5 does tussle with the green decks formidably.
Yeah, I've also liked red-black spells, and it's similar to blue-black in the sense that both the decks essentially have the same game plan, which is play out like a control deck, and red gives you, instead of blue, like blue gives you some card advantage and just good blue cards that you're likely to get late. The red gives you, like if people aren't getting the red in your pod, red gives you the cheap interaction like Take Out the Trash and Agate Assault, Take Out the Trash being better, but you'll play some Agate Assaults as well. Like if you're getting those cards late, like the way to get into the deck in my experience, limited albeit, but it's similar to blue in that you start heavy black and then you cherry pick the best red spells, and it also gives you Coruscation Mage, which is pretty sweet as like a non-attacking way to finish out the game. That's the one in a red 2/2 that's got Offspring, and each one of the creatures whenever you cast a spell pings your opponent, which also in this version of red black lets you play the cards specifically like the red black red uncommon that, you know, gives you card advantage whenever your opponent's lost life. It lets you trigger that life loss without having to duke it out.
Oh, nice.
In combat, yeah, which is kind of cool. But then again, like you said with Hoarder's Overflow, you need stuff like Starfall. This is the best home, I think, for Dire Sight outside of white black, and Dire Sight has done well here for me, and even Sinister Monolith as a non-creature spell to trigger Coruscation Mage and things like that. I think this is a good home for that as well, but it's more of a classic control deck that you get into by starting deep in black and then getting good red cards late.
Another shout for Fountainport Bell is that it's like a land, like, yeah, it triggers your builder's talents, but it's again like a land, air quotes, that triggers those cards too. It triggers your Coruscation Mage, it triggers your Kindle Spark Duos. I noticed you didn't mention Kindle Spark Duo in your
run of cards here. Are you still not a believer?
I am not a believer. Do you like that card?
I mean, I like it. My
it's terrible. A 1-3 is such a bad body in the
so
format.
Speaking of it being a bad body, what makes it a better body is Patchwork Banner. And I'll tell you where Patchwork Banner is, I have been most impressed by, is Blue Red. Turning your otter, like, it solves the problem that Blue Red has, which is that Blue Red is like, hey, can you just give me a sec? I'm going to play my 2-mana 1/1s and my 3-mana 2/2s. And Patchwork Banner says, hey, I'll trigger those, plus I will give a permanent buff to those cards. And all of a sudden, your Otter Ball Antics is making a 2-mana 2/2 with prowess and flashes back a 3/3 with prowess. And that is a lot better. Plus, Patchwork Banner triggers all of that non-creature stuff. So I've drafted Blue Red a few times, and I've found it to be like, I'm not, again, this is not a good deck, but I think...
You were really selling folks here.
I just want to put the caveat on. It's just like, you're gonna, I think, especially if you're drafting, maybe not in the best of one ladder, but if you're drafting in any kind of competitive pods, you're gonna have to draft Blue Red at some point.
Yes.
And you're gonna want to know how to draft it. And I think Patchwork Banner is really important in those decks. And it feels to me like, you remember drafting Blue Red in OTJ? And it was just like, no one wanted to touch it. And so the pods where 3 or 4 of the Blue Red rares were opened, you just got them. Like, you just get past. I got a pack 1 pick 3 Ral the other day, and then I got past Alania, and it was just like, okay, no one wants to draft Blue Red, I'll draft Blue Red. But then when the deck is so open, you do need to know what the pieces are that really, like, oh, what do I need to do? And so the two cards that I've been impressed by, Patchwork Banner for sure is like, you got to have that in your Blue Red deck because it makes your creatures big, right? Again, makes your Kindle Spark duos being 2/4s. All of a sudden you're like, oh, that's not a bad card at all. And leveraging Wildfire Howl has been very good here. The 1 red, deal 2 to all creatures, and you can gift a card to deal 1 damage to something and then 2 to all creatures.
Because that shores up your matchup against rabbits, which is the archetype that yes. struggles with the most. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And a lot of the times, those, because you have a lot of card selection, card advantage, like, when it's bad, you can usually chuck it in some way. And so I just found that, like, I really want to make sure I have access to a copy of that in Blue Red.
You're selling me on Patchwork Banner. That makes sense, because when you get that deck also, you're likely to get all the otters because nobody else wants them anyway. So you're going to end up in that type of streamlined deck where Patchwork Banner is great. Yeah,
correct.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and like, again, like, Patchwork Banner is a card that is going to be contested. But so, like, if you find yourself in Blue Red and you're opening up a pack that has Banner versus Red Removal Spell, I think, like, you'd just be inclined to be like, oh, I should take out the trash. And I would say, no, you really want to make sure you have Banner in that deck.
Yeah, I buy it.
I was trying to have another category here of, once I have 2 of these, my pick order changes, because I was kind of inspired by having 2 Jolly Gerbils in a draft earlier this week. And that's the 1 and a white 2/3 that whenever you gift something, you draw a card. And I've been impressed by this on the other side of the battlefield as well. And I just couldn't find other cards that fit this category of, like, when I have 2, I'm going to start to mess around that I haven't already sort of listed in other categories here in this episode.
I would say Eddie Merc Crab. Once I get the second Eddie Merc Crab, I'm pretty interested in spells.
Yes, I totally agree. But that feels more like signposty slash, that's just like, that's good, right? That's like,
that's
clearly
just good drafting.
That's just good drafting, I would say. And that's sure. clearly like what that card and deck is doing. But I guess it's, you could be Blue Red, but you'd probably just prefer to be Blue Black with that.
I would prefer to be Blue Black with that, yeah.
Yeah. All right, should we get to a draft log where maybe we're going to see the aforementioned Builder's Talent?
Please.
Okay, so pack 1, pick 1. You see the following card as an option, which is Egra, Eater of All, 3 black green, 6/6, mythic, ward, sack of food. Other creatures are food artifacts in addition to their other types, and whenever a food is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you put 2 counters on Egra, Eater of All. I did not realize how busted this is with the disenchants in the format.
Yes, because everything turns into food. But also, mm-hmm. other than that, it's also just, it looks so clunky, but it is just huge. And it's very difficult if your opponent's not already playing a food deck to interact with profitably. Well, because they typically have to sack a creature to pay for the ward unless they're like playing black green or whatever, you know?
One of the first times I played against this card, I was streaming and I was like looking at my sideboard and I was like, oh, I'll bring in the clunky red 5-mana deal 6. And chat was like, no, because when you pay the ward costs, it'll be an 8-8.
Eight,
I was like, wait, what the heck? How do you kill this thing?
So big.
It's so big. Also,
if you have it, you really want, I mean, it's a great card anyway, but you're very interested in the colossal, whatever, the one in a green +3/+3 trample. Like, wait, ways to give us trample.
I mean, it's probably going to win
anyway, but pretty juicy to give it trample.
I've also grounded out and beaten it. I had a match against this card in my day one run of the qualifier weekend last weekend where I had to do some fancy footwork to mess around with being able to. My opponent luckily did not have a way to give it trample, because I think by the end of the game it was like a 24-24 or something.
Right, the one saving grace is that it doesn't have vigilance and reach or something, you know, like the moose.
right. Pack one, pick two, you've got options. There's a Baker's Bane duo, there's an Intrepid Rabbit, 2 and a white, 3/2 with offspring 1. When it enters, target creature you control gets ++1 until end of turn. There's Fireglass Mentor, the black red signpost. There's Mockingbird in the pack, the X and a blue 1/1 flyer. You can have it enters a copy of any creature on the battlefield with mana value less than or equal to the amount of mana spent to cast Mockingbird, except it's a bird and has flying.
Yeah, this is where my draft strategy has changed. Like a week ago, I would have taken Baker's Bane duo here and stayed on rails. I love Mockingbird. I think that card's super powerful, and I'm more willing to splash, especially in the Sultai life. So I'm like thrilled to take Mockingbird here and have Ygritte and Mockingbird and figure out what my two base colors are and splash whichever part of whichever one I need to splash.
And that's, I mean, like, yeah, Mockingbird is, I do agree with you that it's very, very powerful, but you don't need to splash, right? Like, wouldn't you rather not splash in the format?
I'm not as averse to it anymore.
I'm not saying that you should, like, I am not averse to it either. But given your, like, your options, if someone was like, you can have a good two-color deck or you can have a good deck that's splashing, wouldn't you rather have a good two-color deck?
I would choose a good two-color deck. But, like, for me, the gap between Mockingbird and Baker's Bane duo, the power delta is high enough.
Big enough. Like,
Baker's Bane duo sometimes is totally irrelevant. Like, and especially like decks with multiple Baker's Bane duos can run into that thing where like you trade, have no way to get card advantage, and then you just get steamrolled by getting buried in card advantage from your opponent. Mm-hmm. And I think having cards the quality of Mockingbird on their own make that a little less likely to happen to you, because Mockingbird pulls so much weight as an individual card.
Yeah, you're selling me here. I did take the Baker's Bane duo at the time, and even 2 seconds ago would have said like, yeah, but you're just like, you have Ygritte, it's black green, don't you just want to take a card that is a great two drop in those colors and doesn't pull you in a different direction? But Mockingbird's really good, and I agree with you that the gap is big enough that it warrants discussion here, if not just being the pick. Cool. So we'll proceed with Baker's Bane duo and be potentially happy that we do, because we might find something worth splashing pack one, pick three. But there are not really green or black cards to shout out, I think, or to consider. There are good ones, but there's Pond Prophet, the Simic hybrid, 1/1 when ETBs you draw a card. There's Dire Sight, the Surveil 2, draw 2, lose 2. There's a Hazel's Nocturne, 3 and a black instant, return up to 2 target creature cards from your graveyard to your hand. Each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. I've buried the lead. There's a Builder's Talent in the pack. What have you done?
Well, I just would like you to pause for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Pack one, pick two. Mockingbird. Do you really want to splash for Mockingbird? Is that good enough? Like, we need a pair of Baker's Bane duo with our Ygritte. Builder's Talent, though? Oh, instantly splashing. Sign me up.
So the cognitive dissonance is real for sure. You're not wrong there. There's not a lot that you're. What are you passing on? What are you taking? Hazel's Nocturne out of this pack? If you're not being an irresponsible person drafting Builder's Talent,
Yeah, Hazel's Nocturne is excellent with an Ygritte and a Baker's Bane duo.
If you had taken with Mockingbird, are you tempted to take Pond Prophet here?
Yes, I would take Pond Prophet if I had taken Mockingbird. Yeah. But this is why I guess I don't play with Builder's Talent, because if I start with this, I'm always taking Hazel's Nocturne, because I want a way to rebuy Ygritte, uh-huh. And I think Hazel's Nocturne is also excellent with two drops like Baker's Bane duo.
Oh yeah. Here's your task for the week. And you may be enough off the format after prepping for the open that you may not play that much this week. But if you find yourself playing this format this week a lot, just don't pass Builder's Talent. Just try it out. It's very fun because it changes how you like it. It gives you a little like something for changing your pick order in the draft, and it is actually good.
Actually, I believe it. I still think what I thought about it in early access. It's just, it's so tough for me to pick it here because I feel like I'm giving up equity. Do you? Okay, so serious question. Mm-hmm. Do you, like, with Baker's Bane duo and Ygritte, taking Builder's Talent over Hazel's Nocturne, do you feel like you're gaining equity or giving up equity? Like, if you're in the arena open, are you picking?
I'm like losing equity, I think, by taking Hazel Nocturne. Here's the thing is that maybe I just should like Hazel's Nocturne more than I do, but I don't like it that much. Like, I think it's fine, but I am not that crazy about it in the realm of, and I get that, like, yes, I have an Ygritte, but like, I got to tell you, my Ygritte's not dying. And if I mill it with a cash grab, I'm taking my Ygritte. Like, it's not finding its way into the graveyard very much. And so this specific card doesn't, in my mind, actually pair that well with Hazel's Nocturne. And I just am not in the world of, I guess I want some grindy card advantage 2-for-1 stuff in my black-green decks. Hazel's Nocturne and Dire Sight, both being in this pack, they're very synonymous to me.
I agree. Yes. Similar, do similar types of things.
And so my feeling is if I end up in black green, I don't care about passing up on these. Like, if that's what's open for me. But in the world where black green isn't open and I end up in white green splash Ygritte, I'm going to be thrilled that I took Builder's Talent here. And I think that's a similar conversation to the pack two, pack one pick two with Mockingbird versus Baker's Bane duo. That, like, in the world where, like, you might feel a little pinned if you just get past the nutso black green deck and you don't end up having to splash Mockingbird, you're probably not going to end up missing Baker's Bane duo. But in the world where black green isn't that open and you do need to go into blue black or blue green splash, like, you're going to be so mad you didn't take Mockingbird. I think it's a lesser degree here because Builder's Talent is obviously worse than Mockingbird, but I think it's a similar thought process.
That's fair. I hear all that. I actually think the right pick is Pond Prophet, even with the Baker's Bane duo and the Ygritte. I think if I were in the arena open, I would take Pond Prophet.
Boo. Builder's Talent rules. I can't stress it enough, man. I can't stress it enough.
And I can't fight you because I literally have not played against it or with it. What? I don't think.
Did you see the screenshot I posted on Twitter yesterday?
I did. I've seen.
I played against it. So first of all, I'm just playing this terrible blue-green Splash Builder's Talent deck on my phone that's like trying to loop. And we didn't talk about the 2-3 Changeling, the Bark Form Harvester, the 2-3 colorless reach. Again, another good reach card. Wears counters well because you don't want to die to flyers in the Builder's Talent deck. And Builder's Talent decks really do grind, and it's the first kind of deck prior to playing these decks. It's the first kind of deck that I feel like I actually am in danger of decking and have like gotten to stack the bottom of my library and then draw those cards with the Harvester. My opponent had 3 Builder's Talents in play. And they I forget what how do they even do it? They had copied their stupid 4-5 bird that, like, whenever other birds that aren't tokens come into play, they make 1-1 fishes. Anyway, their board was just massive, and then they swung out, and I was trying to line up 22 blocks with my... it was horrible.
You are selling me on Builder's Talent for what it's worth. I need desperately to feel something positive from this format, so I am planning on giving Builder's Talent a try.
Builder's Talent is going to get you there. The one other thing that I want to talk about, like, we could go deeper in this draft, but I feel like we've sort of done the thing. Like, you take Builder's Talent here, and then you're just drafting, you're more drafting Builder's Talent deck, like pack one, pick four. you take a Banishing Light. Again, like not over much. Like there's a Tree Guard duo in the pack, the 3 and a green 3/4. Give something plus X and Vigilance until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. And like if you were streamlined black, green, yeah, you would just take that. But you're not thrilled. And Banishing Light gives you a good removal spell with synergy with Builder's Talent. So I don't know. Like that's sort of the thing where this draft, the direction this draft goes.
Okay, so question for you, because this is a card you have not shouted out that I think pairs well with Builder's Talent. Are you actively interested in stocking the pantry with Builder's Talent?
That is the card I want to talk about that you're not. And the reason is that once you're doing the thing, you just never, like, by the time you're doing the thing, and because I have the deck I'm talking about, this green blue splash Builder's Talent deck that I have.
Can you feel the passion from this man right now, people who are listening?
I'm bringing
absolute fire for Builder's Talent that you're hearing right now.
It's so good. That has a Stocking the Pantry in it. And the reason you would think Stocking the Pantry is good is, oh, wow, well, it triggers your Builder's Talent, right? Because it's a non-creature thing. And then Builder's Talent is putting counters on stuff. And then Stocking the Pantry is going to let you draw cards with those counters.
That sounds great to me. What's not to like?
By the time you're doing that, you're already like decking. And so you're just you're just like stacking your library anyway. And like you don't need to draw cards. Like I can't tell you the amount. I wish I could tell you how many counters I have left stranded on Stocking the Pantry. Versus,
what do you think the upper number is? Are we talking consistently over 10?
No. Yeah, I was just thinking like cumulative over like the amount of times I've cast Stocking the Pantry.
Okay.
I probably stranded like 40 counters on that thing. Versus like it's drawn me 3 cards. Because like I just never, if I'm in a position where I can, where I've got done all the things and then I'm going to spend 2 mana just to draw a random card, like I'm winning that game anyway.
Okay. We each have a challenge here.
Okay.
My challenge is to play with Builder's Talent.
And my challenge is to draft myself well.
No. my challenge is to draft some Builder's Talent and put my money where my mouth is. And okay. Your challenge, I want you to let yourself live a little bit during Card Eval season next time.
Well, this is a great place to end the episode and give a little tiny tease for what I think we're going to talk about next week.
All right. And on that note, folks, if you're feeling bored with Bloomburrow, do some cooking with Builder's Talent. Great place to wrap us up as always. Thank you to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our tier list there. I hope that after this week, you might find Builder's Talent in the A range on our tier list.
The tier list has not been updated since like 3 days into the format. So maybe I'll do that if we're shouting it out.
That could be pretty fun. But there's also our episode backlog, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our merch courtesy of TeePublic, and of course our Patreon page. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or you want to shoot us your Builder's Talent screenshots, email us at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Or if there's something else that you've cooked with that we didn't shout out this week, get those over to us too. Ben needs to feel something with not just Builder's Talent. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn.
and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.